Welcome to Get Over It, Intuitive Transformation Radio for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Tonight we have got a wonderful, wonderful guest. We have Atherton Durst with us, and she, and it might be Dress, I might have said that wrong, so we'll talk about that in a moment, but she is the author of The Intuitive Dance, Building, Protecting, and Clearing Your Energy. So this is a fabulous show. She's written an excellent book. Let's sit back, relax, take some notes, because there's a lot of pointed information that we're going to share tonight that's going to help you get over what you're stuck with in your life and have a better life. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we are going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. Now, the question is, are you really ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners. Intuitive since birth, I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your Eminence, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. My clients say that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, on my website. And again, that's MoniqueChapman.com. Stop letting your ego, that negative voice in the back of your mind, cause you more stress and anxiety. Instead, start working to find inner peace and harmony. The intuitive dance guides you to master the ego by utilizing your innate intuitive abilities and helps you to find the way back to inner calm. Learn how to improve your wellness and happiness with practical exercises and easy-to-use techniques as you move through this book's 3 main sections, building, protecting, and clearing your energy. Atherton Drenth is a clairvoyant, medical intuitive, and holistic energy practitioner facilitating transformational healing for her clients. She has been extensively trained, and certified as a medical intuitive and holistic energy practitioner. She has been in private practice for over 16 years and has conducted over 35,000 healing balances with clients from around the world. She is also a compassionate teacher committed to helping others develop their full intuitive potential through yearly workshops. She has a private practice in the Toronto area of Ontario, Canada. So you can check her out on her website. She has 2. The first one is AthertonDrenth.com, and I'm going to spell that for you. AthertonDrenth.com or ParadigmCenter.com. ParadigmCenter. You can check her out there, and the book is available everywhere, Amazon, U.S. and Canada. It's an excellent book. Welcome, Atherton.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Monique.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. I absolutely enjoyed the book. You know, I'm being an intuitive, and I get a lot of intuitive books, and your book really spoke to me because it was very comprehensive. You help people with managing their energy by providing tools that are easy to implement, easy to use, so that they can keep their life in
balance. And I applaud you for that, because so many say, well, this is how you make your intuition better, and this is how you can control others. But you really put the information out there in an easy-to-absorb manner that, you know, your book reads like a novel almost. It's so easy reading, and it's absolutely fabulous. So thank you for all of this.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm glad you found it helpful.
Oh, yes, I did. Now, you were recently, I don't know if it's recently, but you were a part of a documentary called Voyage to Betterment. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Voyage to Betterment, Voyage to Betterment was a documentary that was put together by a gentleman by the name of Andrew Faka, who wanted to show people that there was a different way to access how to get better health, whether it be through diet and meditation, and through energy work. And I was a last-minute add-in, actually, to the documentary. But what he did was he very effectively showed people that you can help to take charge of your health by not only looking at the different things that you can do with your diet, but also how you can add in meditation and how you can add energy work. And what he did is he took 10 participants. They did their blood work before they started the study, and then they followed them for, I can't remember if it was 30 or 60 days, and then they went back and remeasured their blood results. And the results, the changes to their health was so dramatic that even the participants were shocked. The part that the energy work played was, first of all, with the medical intuition. Everybody received a medical intuitive scan by a person who only had their name, nothing else. And her results were so dead-on accurate that the participants refused to sign off on allowing that to be shown in the documentary. That's how accurate it was. Then they showed myself and my teacher, actually, Larry Steele, actually conducting healing sessions. And again, the participants were so shocked at how accurate those sessions were that everybody refused to sign off before the documentary came out. And in the end, there was one very brave soul by the name of Ben who said, you know what, put me back in there because I want people to see how effective this can really be. And it really made such a huge statement for the people that had that saw the documentary. It was interesting being there and watching the participants and how they reacted to that video, that documentary, and especially how they reacted to the medical intuitive scans and to the energy work, because people don't understand how powerful this work is, and they don't have common language. And the documentary is helping to put common language around not only changing your diet and meditation, but how energy work can be assistance and how accurate it really is.
So the people that didn't sign off, they were afraid because of the validity of the information that they received? So it's like they were non-believers?
Well, the majority of the participants were very skeptical going in. They were definitely believers after it was over. But the point was that the information was so accurate and it was so intimate and it was so personal that they didn't feel comfortable sharing those painful pieces of themselves in the documentary, which was completely understandable.
Okay.
Because, you know, as you know, being an intuitive, there are things that come up in people's sessions that can be so dead on, but it's very raw. And it's hard enough dealing with it on a one-to-one basis with a practitioner, but to share that with the world?
Yeah, that's truly unmasking yourself.
Yes.
On many levels, and that can be quite frightening. Now, in your book, The Intuitive Dance, you work a lot with intuition and the ego. So could you first give us your definition of ego and intuition, and then how you marry them together?
Well, first of all, I think people need to understand that what our ego really is. And our ego is a part of ourselves that forms in childhood. And it helps to define who we are. And we need our egos. And our ego is how we see each other. But what we lose track of is the fact that the ego is formed from our earliest moments of experience, and it forms beliefs that aren't necessarily connected to the emotional context. So then we run into a problem with our egos interfering with our intuition, which is our connection to the inner divine.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it's very helpful to explain to people that our egos are really just tape recorders that record experiences without emotional context. But they're also very frightened little children who don't know any better. So they develop beliefs that we think are the truth, but they're really the lie. And we can use our intuition to go back and start to unravel, unpeel, what is the ego really afraid of? And then when we start to get the truth of the story, and then are able to use our adult intuitive mind to understand the emotional context, we realize that we've based so much of our reactions in life on things that are not truthful.
Very interesting. You know, we have a classic example of what I feel is a combination of the ego and intuitive gone horribly wrong right here in the United States, and that's our current president. I believe he's highly intuitive, but I think that he allows or doesn't know how to control the ego, or maybe he does, and this is the way he wants to operate. But it seems like, you know, the intuition is definitely there. I think it can be pretty spot on, but the ego gets in the way. So why do we allow our ego, that tape recorder, as you say, just to take over because we feel that that is better than following our own inner truth?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's just the way we're raised in society. We are not raised to trust our intuition. We are not raised, we're raised to do as we're told, right? You've got to be the good little girl or the good little boy and do as you're told, and everybody else is the authority except you. And what that does is it disempowers you because somebody else is always going to be the bigger authority than you are, because you've been told what to do your whole life. And then as we get to be adults, especially as we mature as adults, we start to question that, and that starts to get us in trouble. Because then people come back at us with fear thoughts and saying, well, why do you believe that? And everybody believes this. Why can't you just go along? Why can't you just play along? And what we don't understand is that when we are controlled by fear, we stop thinking. And then we stop making choices that are right for us. And then the counter argument to that is, well, if everybody ran around and started doing what they wanted to do, well, then you'd have anarchy, would you? I mean, if there's an earthquake, people come together. I mean, look what happened to 9/11.
Right.
I mean,
right.
9/11 was a classic example of how everybody pulled together and did what was best. They started working together not only as individuals, but as a collective.
Well, you know, I think that taps into what you say in the book. In the book, you say that all is connected, like we're all connected like a drop of water in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in times when we truly need to come together, we forget about what that drop of water looks like or smells like or feels like.
Mm-hmm.
We just join together to make it all happen. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. And you know, people get confused with what's the right thing to do. When are you the drop of water, and when are you the drop of water in the ocean? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I use the analogy throughout the book of how we are all an individual. We are all souls having a human experience, which means that we are an individual having an individual experience, but we are also a part of the collective, which means we're part of the ocean. So the spiritual aspect of that we lose track of is the fact that if I'm helping you, then I'm helping myself as well, because I'm an individual and you're an individual, but by assisting you on your journey and you assisting me on our journey, my journey, then we are working together in the collective. We are working together as one. And the counter argument that I get, especially from women all the time, well, if I start honoring myself, then I'm going to be selfish. No, you're not being selfish. What you're doing is you are being truthful about what's right for you and what's not right for you. And when you are in your truth, it's easier for you to have a more authentic relationship with the people around you. Then you're not getting tied up in guilt and fear and this illusion that I have to be what other people want me to be. You lose yourself when you do that. And I think, and then we can't understand why our children get angry with us because they say we're not being truthful. Well, we tell our children that it's not okay to lie, but we lie to our kids all the time.
All the time.
all the time. You know, if your kid comes up to you and says, do you have a headache, and you really do have a headache, and say, no, no, I don't have a headache, I'm fine, you've just lied to your child.
Exactly.
When in fact it's easy enough to just say, yeah, you know what, you're right, I do have a headache. You don't need to worry about it. I'll take care of it. Why don't you go off and play or do your homework? That is integrity. That is honesty. That is authenticity.
Why is it that women especially are programmed that way? I mean, we're always taking care of everybody else. Everything's external, and we forget about the internal until we're, like, I don't know, 40, extremely depressed, can't function anymore, and then we might take a peek, but then we're afraid to.
Yeah. Well, I think we get very confused about what it means to be of service and what it means to be a servant. And being of service means that we are there to be of service to other people, but we also have to be of service to ourselves, which means that we have to be aware of the fact that I'm too tired or I don't want to take on another commitment and that it's all right to say no.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite of that is also being all right with your girlfriend saying to you, I'm too tired, I can't do it, and it's all right for her to say no.
It's interesting. My sister was going to go to an event with a girlfriend of hers, and at the last minute, something came up, and my sister really could not go. And when she called the girlfriend to tell her, she was actually in my car, so that's why, you know, the conversation went on. The girlfriend first was silent for about 3 minutes. I mean, not a word, and I could feel the rage through the phone. And then she said some unpleasant words and hung up, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, and all because, you know, my sister couldn't attend an event that is repeatable, you know, so I was like, whoa, you know, back off a little bit. Now, I was going to cover this a little bit later, but I think it's appropriate right now. In your book, you have a story, because I think we're kind of talking a little bit about emotional blackmail.
Yeah.
You have a story about Kathy. Could you share Kathy's story and what emotional blackmail is so that this concept can really sink into women, and men too, but definitely sink into our female audience?
Well, first of all, I'll just define what emotional blackmail is so that they understand the context of the story. So emotional blackmail is a very insidious, subtle form of verbal and emotional abuse, in my personal opinion, and I work with it all the time. I find it to be very perversive and disempowering, and I think it's one of those forms of emotional abuse that we are not addressing as a society. What's most frustrating about emotional blackmail is that the blackmailer has found a way to make you feel like you're the problem when in fact you are not. So emotional blackmail is any type of put-down that makes you feel powerless and ineffective. And it's a form of emotional abuse that can be life-limiting and emotionally crippling. So you find yourself backing down even when you don't want to. And it ultimately has you believing that you're not worthy of love or attention, and you'll do anything to get them to make you feel loved again. So it is our ultimate fear of being isolated and being unloved. So it uses statements like, you don't love me anymore. If you really loved me, you'd back me up. What, you're smarter than me now. Oh, so now you know it all too. I'm not good enough for you. If you leave, I'll hurt myself. If you leave, I'll tell everybody what a loser you are. So, I mean, it goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So Kathy was a young woman who was growing up in a family who were just above the poverty level. And she wanted out. She didn't want to continue. She was third generation poverty. And she just realized that she did not want to live and lead the life that her parents were leading, as well as her siblings. And she was trying to find a way out. And she wanted to go to college. She was struggling to get through high school. And she had found out about me through a friend of a friend. And she came to me and she said, you know, when my parents found out I wanted to go to college, they went nuts. You know, they told her that she wasn't smart enough, she wasn't good enough, and then they started with, you know, so now you think we're better than we are. And she was devastated because she loved her parents, and she wanted to honor her parents, but she also wanted to break free, and she wanted to go to school. So her family started to undermine her every step of the way. They found out she had a bank account, and her father actually went to the bank and tried to close her bank account down and get the money out. You know, but this is back in the days when, you know, sometimes a parent could get away with that, right? She had a boyfriend who was also buying into it as well. And she She said the turning point for her was coming home one day and finding out that her parents had moved her boyfriend into her bedroom. And her father said she needed to give up these stupid dreams of hers and settle down and just get pregnant and have a baby. And she said she just stood there, and this look on her parents' face and the look on her boyfriend's face, it was like she suddenly realized that they were that this was killing her. She just picked up her purse and walked out. And through this whole process of helping her to deal with emotional blackmail was her coming to me in session and saying, okay, so this is what I want to do, and this is the reaction I'm dealing with. Okay, so if this is the reaction you're dealing with, the first thing you need to do is take a look at the bigger picture and realize that they're the ones that are afraid. They're the ones that are trying to make you small because they don't know how to be bigger than who they are. And when you can start to understand that when an emotional blackmailer makes these statements, they're really only talking about themselves, then you can get your power back. Because you learn you can't change their mind, and you can't fight them, so you don't respond. You just stand there and realize that they say, well, you don't love me anymore. What they're really doing is saying, I don't love myself anymore. So then there's compassion and there's empathy, but then you're not buying into the blackmail. Now, yes, they're going to get angry, and yes, they're going to isolate you, and yes, they're not going to want to have anything to do with you, but that's when you have to make a choice. Do you want to, in Kathy's situation, live in poverty and be angry and resentful for the rest of her life, or realize that she loved her parents but couldn't love who they were and how they responded to life and get out? And she chose, and it took a lot of courage, and it does. It takes a lot of courage to overcome emotional blackmail. But ultimately, you have to choose what's right for you. And she was able to do that. Now, for her, the only way she could escape was to move far away, which she did. And I didn't hear from her for a couple of years, but she contacted me, and she just said, I want to let you know that I've graduated from college.
Yeah.
And I've met this lovely young man, and he has the same dreams I have, and he supports me in my dreams. We've bought a house. We're planning on having a family. When I'm pregnant, I'm going to work on my master's. And she said, thank you for helping me to get out. Now, does it mean she's never talked to her parents again? No, she's talked to them. I mean, she's in touch with them. But she also realizes that she's going to be dealing with this for the rest of her life, but now she has the tools. And ultimately, what she realized was that her father felt very threatened by anybody who had an education because he'd never learned how to read.
Oh, okay.
And his fear was so all-encompassing, he had the whole family shut down so he could feel safe. Mm-hmm. So nobody in that family had ever graduated from high school, and all because Daddy had never learned how to read. And on her mother's situation, her mother was all about, we never have any money, we're always going to be poor. She never learned how to handle money. So they were imposing their beliefs on her, which they thought was their truth. It was really the lie, right?
Yeah. Yep. So, folks, be aware of your family's BS and that's belief system and the bull.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
It's really be important. So it seems like Kathy listened to her ego to a degree, definitely paid attention to her intuition because she felt that when her parents and had moved the boyfriend into the bedroom, she was like, no. So was that the intuitive part, or the feeling that, you know, this isn't going to work, or was that the ego? Because it seems like the ego can also be a positive aspect. Everybody puts it in negative all the time, but it seems like it could be a bit of a positive aspect, at least in that case.
Well, and that's very true, and that's a good point. I mean, we need our egos. You know, so many, I'm always in the same situation. When I discovered what a problem my ego was, I mean, I felt that I needed to shut it down. I needed to overcome it. What you really need to realize is to walk what the Buddhists say is the middle road. We need our egos, but we are in charge of our egos. Our egos are not in charge of us, and our intuition helps us to do that because our intuition is our connection to the higher divine. And if we allow ourselves to remain clear about being in our intuition, then we realize what an asset our ego can be. I have these goals, and this is how I'm going to get them. This is how I'm going to be authentic in my own life. This is how I'm going to be true to myself. This is how I can still love you and be aware of the fact that you have an issue, but it's not my truth. It's not my issue. I love you anyways, but I'm not going to let you control my life anymore.
Okay. Well, folks, we're speaking to Atherton Drench. She's the author of The Intuitive Dance, Building, Protecting, and Clearing Your Energy. Her website, athertondrench.com, that's athertondrench.com, or paradigmcenter.com, paradigmcenter.com, and of course the book is available everywhere. Atherton, let's switch gears and talk about intuition for a moment. In your book, you talk about four forms of intuition. Mm-hmm. What are they?
Well, the four forms of intuition are the clairvoyance, claircognizance, clairaudience, and clairsentience. Everybody has all four, but one will be more dominant than the other. So when mm-hmm. when I'm teaching my students how to get in touch with their intuition, I find that the easiest thing to do is, first of all, help them to find out what their dominant intuitive trait is. Once they have found out what their dominant intuitive trait is, then I have them hone in on that one. And once they get comfortable with it and they understand how to use it on a day-to-day basis, then they start to see where the other three come into play. So okay. Clairvoyant is clear seeing. It's being able to see images clearly through your mind's eye. The clairsentient is clear feeling. It's feeling other people's stuff. It's also what we call body cues. So if my friend has a toothache, if I'm a strong clairsentient, then I will also have a hint of a toothache for myself. The clairaudient is clear hearing, and that's the one you never want to bring up at the doctors or your friends because then they think you're going a little cuckoo. Mm-hmm. And then the last is claircognizance, which is just knowing. It's just the hunch. It's knowing without really knowing why you know.
Okay. Now, within these four forms in the book, you also talk about how the ego interacts with each and every one of them. Why was that so important to point out to us?
Well, when people start to realize what their dominant intuitive ability is, they need to understand how the ego is going to attack that particular ability to shut it down because it's coming from a fear place. So, for example, with a clairvoyant, which is clear seeing, it's going to be very resistant to change. It's going to make you feel inflexible. Well, let me just step back a little bit. So mm-hmm. when you are in the intuitive, empowered by your intuition, you have what I call the inner calm and then being in your inner zen. So for a clairvoyant, when they are in their full intuitive clairvoyant ability, they have the ability to see the big picture. They're the organizers. They love their daytimers. They're problem solvers. They're the list makers.
Mm-hmm.
The ego of the clairvoyant, so when the clairvoyant is out of their power, they're resistant to change. They can be inflexible. They can come across as being arrogant. They can believe that they're the only person who's only right. They can jump to conclusions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For the clairsentient, when a clairsentient is fully in their inner calm of their clairsentience, which is clear feeling, they're very loving, they're empathetic, they're kitty magnets, pet magnets. They're always the person who's in the right place at the right time. They love good food. They're the party pleasers. They want everybody to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
When they are in the ego of their clairsentience, they pick up everybody's stuff. They are easily overwhelmed. They have problems with anxiety, panic attacks. They worry all the time. They're afraid of crowds. They can cry at the drop of a hat. They need lots of reassurance. They'll blow up over nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The clairaudient, when they are in their power, their calm, the intuitive calm of being the clairaudient, they are very articulate. They think before they speak. They're often multilingual, and they love music. They're audiophiles. Mm-hmm. When they're in the ego of their clairaudience, they can be very insecure about their abilities. They really struggle with that voice. Oh, I think I'm losing my mind because I hear voices in my mind. They really struggle with ambient noise. They have very low self-trust. But they can also love the sound of their own voice. That's the person who just never shuts up.
Mm.
Now, the claircognizant, the claircognizant, when they're in their intuitive power, they're quick thinkers. They're very spontaneous. They're adaptable. They're the strong negotiators. And they have a lot of synchronicity in their life. when they are being overtaken by the ego aspect of it, they are very slow to trust their instincts. They have a tough time fitting in groups. They have a low tolerance for fools. They can cut you off at the kneecaps before you even open your mouth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you've given a very clear depiction of each. So, you know, folks, where are you in that spectrum? Okay, and it's not a thing of good or bad. It's just looking at the truth of what is,
yeah.
You know? And a lot of people say, oh, well, I can't be that because it doesn't sound so wonderful. Well, there's light and dark and everything. So
yeah.
Get the book because she explains it in a bit more detail, and you'll be able to feel the energy. Now, also in the book, you talk about the ethics of intuition. A lot of people tend to forget about that, and you said that there are 6 standards. Could you go over those briefly?
Sure. So when you start to get in touch with your intuition, it's important to understand that there are boundaries of when and how to use your intuition. So we're all familiar with the TV shows where a psychic walks up to somebody and says, oh, I have this feeling that I just need to share this with you. Well, in my world, that's a huge violation of intuitive ethics.
Mine too.
So intuitive ethics are a set of guidelines that I developed to help me better understand how and when to use my intuition. And I found that what they did was they created loving boundaries that not only helped me to honor my own intuitive ability, but also helped me to honor the other person's free will. Because we forget that we've all been gifted with free will. And I think that that's God's greatest gift to us, is that we have free will. And with free will comes choice, which means that we all have the freedom to choose what we think, say, or believe. But I also have to honor another person's choice. So the other thing that I found about intuitive ethics, that it also became a very effective tool to help me reduce stress and anxiety. And as I taught it to clients, they were also coming back and saying it was helping them. So the intuitive ethics are as follows. And I'm going to just list them off, and then I'll go back and explain each one.
Okay.
And how they are. Just because you know doesn't mean you do. Wait to be asked. Only do as asked. If you're not asked but wish to help, then send love silently and hand it over to God. Always ask, is this mine or does it belong to somebody else? And then the last is be honest. So the first one, just because you know doesn't mean you do. What that means is that if I get an intuitive hit off of somebody else, or I see or sense something from them, that doesn't give me the right to go up and say, oh, by the way, I'm feeling this from you. Is that true? I have to wait to be asked. Now, if they come to me and say, oh, I'm not feeling very well, then I will ask them, do you want to share it with me or not? So I'm giving them choice.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will only do as asked. So say, for example, I am out with a friend and I can tell that she's really upset about something. And I can feel it. I can sense it. I even have an idea intuitively in my mind of what it's all about. But that doesn't mean I can bring it up. But if my friend suddenly turns to me and says, you know, I'm feeling really off today and I'm feeling really upset, my response to her would be, do you want me to listen or are you asking me for help? And 9 times out of 10, people will say, no, I just want you to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to learn how to bite your tongue. But every once in a while, they'll say, no, I would like to know what you think. What do you feel? So then I'm being asked. But I'm only being asked specifically about that one thing. So I may intuitively know that there's 10 different ways for her to solve the situation. So instead of just saying, well, if you just did blah, 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 you'll be fine. That's not honoring.
Uh-huh.
What I'll say to her is, well, you could do A, B, or C. What do you think? And I hand it back. So just because I know doesn't mean I do. So I'm listening. I'm waiting to be asked. And when I am asked, I'm being clear. Are you asking me for help, or do you just need me to listen? If she wants me to listen, then I'm going to listen. If she's asking me for help, then I'm going to offer her suggestions, but then I'm going to honor her choices by handing it back to her. What do you think you should do? How do you want to handle it? That's honoring. if I'm feeling something from somebody else that they're really distressed, or I should step back, if I'm suddenly with in a group of people and I'm starting to feel distressed, uh-huh. the very first thing I'm going to ask myself, is this mine or somebody else's? Because this has just come out of the blue. And 9 times out of 10, I'm going to hear, no, that's not yours. Well, then I'm just going to be aware that there's somebody in the room who's feeling unhappy, and I've picked up on it, but I'm not there to fix it. So now I can let it go. And all I can do is just send them love. If my friend is upset, she hasn't asked for help, she only wants me to listen, she doesn't want any of my suggestions, then all I can do is send her love. Right?
Right.
And then always be honest. If somebody comes to me and says, so, how are you today? They're going to get an honest answer. If my kids come to me and say, Mom, are you having a bad day? I'm going to say, yeah, you know what? I'm having a bad day. It has nothing to do with you. I just had a really rough day at the office today. Thank you very much for loving and caring. Why don't you go and read a book or do your homework? I'm fine.
Well, could I ask a question in the middle of this? What if you're, you know, someone comes to you and say how you're doing today and you really want to tell them the truth, but they don't want to hear it? They're like, don't tell me anything unless it's good news. So is that a person who really doesn't care?
No, it just means that they can't handle it. So you have to honor that.
Mm-hmm.
We can't take responsibility.
Why would they ask?
Because they're trying to be polite. They're trying to be caring. You know, they're saying what society says you should say. I mean, we all do it, right? How are you today? Oh, I'm fine. You know, it's our automatic response. Because we don't really, really want to know what's going on in other people's lives because we're struggling with our own stuff all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay. So those are the intuitive ethics. And I when I finally figured those all out, I wrote them out, and I had them by the phone. I had them on my computer. I had them on the dashboard of my car. You know, I was raising two teenagers. I was getting in touch with my intuition, and it was a tricky time for me. And my kids were growing up. They were leaving home, and I found that my kids were really teaching me how to honor this, because I was so intuitive and I was so aware of what was going on. And there were times they just wanted that privacy. Mom, just leave it alone, you know? I'll come to you when I need help, okay? But just, can you back off?
It's so hard.
Yeah.
So, especially for a mom, it's so hard because you see and you know and you feel and you want it to be better. And it took me a while to get used to the idea of letting them fall down, scrape the knees, scrape the nose, get up and dust themselves off. You know,
yeah,
they're
exactly.
Stronger for it, but boy, that hurts. You know, you had a story in your book about Sheila and talking about intuitive ethics. When I read that, I mean, it turned out okay, but
yeah.
When I was first reading that, I was like, oh, hell no. She came into my house. So can you share a little bit of that? You don't necessarily have to share the end if you don't want to, but I mean, when I read that, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that was an interesting dinner party. It was a time in our life. It was the 80s, and you know, like most couples, we were really struggling financially with you know, pay cuts and job losses, and you know, it was really a tough time for us.
Yeah.
And my husband had run into a colleague, and he said, "So, you know, how are things going?" And you know, my husband shared, "Oh, you know, things are really rough. Blah 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 blah." And he said, "Well, you know, I'm going to be in town next week. I've got somebody that I think you need to meet." So my husband just went ahead and said, "Sure, come on over for dinner." So I wasn't thrilled because I don't consider myself to be a great hostess, but that's fine. And when our friend showed up with Sheila, it was the strangest encounter I've ever had in my entire life. We opened the door, and the two of them were standing there, and they made their introductions, and they stepped in the door, and then Sheila just stopped talking, dropped her arms to her sides, and just kind of looked around and closed her eyes, and then just started to wave around in the energy. And I thought, good Lord, who is this woman?
Uh-huh.
And then she and our friend just stood there smiling, like he fully expected everything she was doing, and I knew that I just needed to play along, which I found really interesting because I wasn't that in touch with my intuition. I wasn't that clear about my intuition back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asked if we could take her on a tour of the house. And I thought, wow, you are brazen, lady. And all I could think is, thank goodness I'd clean up the kids' room. So we took her on a tour of the house, and she looked in everything. She was looking in the closet. She was walking through the bedroom. She was going through the basement. And I thought, who is this woman? And she's not saying a word. And so we have our little dinner party, and, you know, we're having a lovely time because our friend is, you know, he's the life of the party, mm-hmm. and she's not saying three words. And then when dinner's over, she finally looks at me, and she says, would you like to know why I wanted to walk through your house? And I was like, sure, yeah, I want to know why you were this amazing. And she proceeded to tell us everything that was wrong about our life just based on what she saw in our house. And we were absolutely gobsmacked. And she said, would you like to know how to fix it? Well, yeah. And she told us what to do. And what she was teaching us were the basics of feng shui. Mm-hmm. And so I just dove into that. And it was amazing how quickly our lives changed when we started to honor the fact that feng shui is also teaching you that not only how you handle your own energy is important, but how you handle the energy of your space is so important. You know, and we're seeing more and more of that as these books on feng shui come out, but also these books on decluttering uh-huh. that are so important. And they do have an impact on your emotional health, and they do have an impact on your physical well-being and on your finances and how successful you are in your careers. And we found that as we started to do the changes, the changes were so dramatic for us in such a quick space of time that within a year, we hardly recognized who we were. I mean, we went from, we were weeks away from seriously having the conversation with the bank about losing the house and becoming bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And that's how close we were to the edge. And, you know, a year later, we both had really great paying jobs, and we had benefits, and we had a new car, and we'd paid off all our debt, and our mortgage was more than easy to handle. Mm-hmm. So it was just... it was just such a shock and such a change for us. And I've been basically following the principles ever since.
Yeah, well, she was a brave woman, because I don't know if you know, I was reading this story. Actually, I read it twice because I was like, oh, my goodness, because I would have been like, no, you know. I'm just weird that way, so I would have been low, but I'm glad you followed that through, because it truly, you know, at some level you paid attention to your intuition, although you weren't really honed into it, as you said, at that time. But, you know, something sparked and said, hey, you know, listen to this. And it did change your life around tremendously. Now, in your book, you've got this wonderful, and guys, she's got a lot of exercises that you can utilize in your book to help you, you know, grasp this information and better your life. But she talks about this wonderful procedure that clears mental chatter. It can help you manage your fears. It's extremely powerful. It's called the vertical axis. Tell us about that. And also with that, I guess tapping it, you don't ground into the earth anymore. You ground into something else.
Yes, so the vertical axis is the most powerful grounding technique that you can learn, because what it does is it grounds you into heaven and earth at the same time. And by doing that, what you are doing is you are getting yourself centered not only in your own inner divine, but you're getting yourself centered into the divine of the Mother Earth and the universe. And when you do that, you're creating a very stable core for yourself. Now, I'll go back and explain what grounding is, because I find that I'm often asked by people, so what exactly do you mean by grounding? And mm-hmm. And I know that for me in the beginning, everybody was saying, well, you need to be more grounded, and I had no idea what they were talking about, and I really struggled with that concept. And, you know, people would say, well, you know, if you take a walk in nature, then you'll feel more grounded. Well, okay, but how do you apply that to your everyday life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what grounding means is it means that you are more connected to what you're feeling and how you feel to your environment. And when you are grounded, you are in a place of calm stillness, and you feel relaxed, and you feel happy, and you feel more peaceful. And the vertical axis is a technique that helps you to attain that very quickly and easily. It only takes a few minutes to do it. I suggest that once people learn the technique, and there's a free audio download on my website, that do it in the morning and do it at night. And what it does is it helps you to stay connected to your intuition, stay connected to your inner divine, and you start to notice that that chatter, that ego monkey mind starts to settle down because you've got enough clarity to say, no, that's not true. I'm not listening to that. Go away. This is the truth.
Okay, so it brings you back to your truth.
Yes. Okay. So it makes it much easier for you to understand what fear is and what fear isn't. It helps you to discern what is the ego versus your intuition. It makes meditation much easier. I found it much easier to go into meditation and stay in a meditative state when I was in my vertical axis. I also found that when I was grounded in the vertical axis, that I was less likely to be manipulated by other people's personal agendas. Oh, that's your stuff. That's not mine. I'm not buying into that. So, very effective technique.
Yeah, and it can be very easy, folks, if you think about your life, to get sucked into other people's agendas and not your own. Think about the last time you did something you really didn't want to do. And that'll make it real clear for you, real, real clear. Okay, so in your book, you also talk about courting, and you also talk about being able to protect yourself and clear the energy space. You pick. Which one do you want to talk about next?
Well, let's talk about cord cutting first.
Okay.
So fear cords are, so first of all, there's three types of energy that comes into the human body. The first one is the one that comes in through the belly button, and that's the silver cord of life, and that's our connection to the divine. If you ever read stories about people who've had an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience, they always talk about following that cord back to their body. And it's why we still have a belly button, which I think is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we have nothing to do with that. That's our connection to the divine. Okay. There are love cords, and we have love cords with anyone who is significant in our life, our children, our parents, our spouses, a pet. You do not cut love cords. Love cords are a gift from God. The angels don't cut them. God doesn't remove them. We have the right to remove a love cord, but then that's your choice, and that's a different discussion for a different day.
Mm-hmm.
But love cords are not cut. You leave them alone. Fear cords, on the other hand, are an energetic nuisance. And fear cords will form with anybody or anything anytime there's any form of disagreement or conflict. They are an energetic nuisance. They're pervasive. They're all around us. It's like being wrapped up in string. It can be very restricting. You get used to it. I mean, parents are make fear cords with their kids all the time. I know I do, even though I know better.
Mm-hmm.
And fear cords are very easy to remove, and I have a procedure in my book, which I call cutting fear cords with the angels. And what it involves is visualizing Archangel Michael being present before you and then asking him to please cut cords with everyone you have been in contact with on this day. And then visualizing or seeing him or feeling him taking a big blue sword and cutting all of those cords and clearing your field out. When the angels cut cords, all that energy is taken back into heaven to be transformed into love and light for the good of all. So you're not hurting anybody. You're not cutting the love. You're not removing yourself from divine. All you're doing is getting rid of the sticky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I say to people, it's like pulling off all the cat hair on your body that you've picked up. It's like lint. You don't need the lint. You carry it around long enough, you're going to have a fur coat. You don't need that.
Okay.
So fear cords are very easy to do. I do them every single day. And like I say, you do it with everyone you've been in contact with, even your own children, because the angels will not and cannot cut love cords.
Okay. And what about the energy of protecting yourself? You have a wonderful story in your book about white light protecting and not how it's always such a good idea. And then what really caught my eye was the dome of protection. Could you talk about that briefly?
Sure. So the dome of protection is your ability to ask for energy to be created over a certain space. So I have a dome of protection over my property, for example. And what the dome of protection does is I set it with the intent, because energy always follows intent. So you visualize a dome over your property, and then you set the intent. So over my my business, for example, I have a dome, and I have designated the Paradigm Center as being holy space, sacred space, healing space, so that all who enter here feel love, trust, and safety. And I hear that from my clients all the time. I just love it here. I don't know what it is about this place, but the minute you pull into the parking lot, you just feel like you can handle anything. Or I'm so happy here. I feel so peaceful here. I also do it over my personal property. If I know there's a storm coming in, I'll ask the angels to protect the property so that the house won't be damaged during a storm. I'll also set the a dome of energy if I'm having company, that when they enter, they feel love, laughter, and they feel at home.
Okay. Now, is it possible with the dome of energy to work with one particular room in your house and keep that energy separate from the rest of the home?
So that's getting into space clearing. And so, yes, you can clear a room, you can clear a house, and you can clear a property. Space clearing, I think, is very important, and it helps to create a place of safety and harmony for families. So, again, it's very easy to do. I have different techniques. I have one for a room, one for a house, and one for a property. And what you're doing is you're coming in and you're asking the angels to clear the room of all negative and ungrounded energy, and then you're asking it to fill it with love and light. And again, you're setting the intent for your children that they sleep peacefully and restfully, and that they're able to study well, for example. A lot of people will do space clearing and then they will forget to fill space with something. And energy doesn't like a vacuum. So that's why I say to people, it's very important, if you're going to clear a space, it's very important that you fill it with love and light afterwards and then set an intent. You know a house is out of balance when funky things start to happen. So in our house, if I start blowing a lot of light bulbs, I know the house is out of balance. If we break a glass or somebody trips and falls, I know that the energy has built up in the house and it needs to be cleared. Because life is life and things happen, right? You've been out in the world, you come home, you're carrying that in your energy field, and it's going to start to stick to stuff in the house. And the space clearing is a lovely way to clear that all out.
Okay. Well, you know, our time is almost up, and I've truly enjoyed my time with you this evening, but I would love to hear about what's on both of your websites, what people can find there, and any other information you'd like to share with us about what's going on in your world.
So on my site, they can learn a little bit more, well, they can learn a lot more about what I do, and if they want to make an appointment with me, so all the information is there. They can order my book off the site. Also, they can, on my site and the Paradigm site, they can see where I'm going to be holding different workshops. And they can also learn more about the Paradigm Center and the lovely colleagues that that I have the honor of working with and the services that they have to offer.
Okay. Well, folks, I hope you've enjoyed this hour as much as I have. We've been speaking with Atherton Drent. The book is The Intuitive Dance, Building, Protecting, and Clearing Your Energy. This is kind of like one of those Bibles you want to have around, you know, a reference book, a guide, so that when you do hit the wall, you can open it up, and it's almost like you open it up to any page and you get the information you're supposed to have at that particular moment. So get the book. It's going to help you make a really teeny tiny investment in yourself to make your life a whole lot better. And again, do check her out at her website. So that's athertondrent.com, athertondrent.com, or paradigmcenter.com, paradigmcenter.com. Atherton, thank you very much. I appreciate your time this evening.
Well, thank you, Monique. It's been my honor.
Okay. And to the audience, thank you for being with us tonight as we collectively get over how to become unstuck and clear our path in the world. I'm truly honored, and I appreciate your time and attention. When you're ready to live a balanced life, give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the radio show. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself. Make the call. The number, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. consider making the masterful choice of loving yourself. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.